So in yesterday's discussion, and we went through the continuation of Arjuna's doubts in the beginning of the chapter, where he just says that, I mean, Krishna starts off just seeing that this is how he's behaving. This is not very Aryan. This is not very proper. So why doesn't he just fight? Because now we're just still dealing in the rasa. They're both kshatriyas, they're on the battlefield, they're friends. Arjuna is not behaving nicely. Arjuna says, well, what's going on? You just fight. This is not proper. You know, you're from a great family and all these things. So you should fight. But then Arjuna says, you know, it's very nice you're saying to fight, but you know, you also fight, but you kill enemies and I'm supposed to kill my relatives. And especially my seniors. So he says, if we do this, then there'll be sin. So this is a central point here, is that he's worrying about the family members dying, and he's worrying about the sin committed by killing them, and by the duties that are there, we see from the last chapter. And he becomes confused. He doesn't know what's better. When you don't know what's this or that, that's confusion. That means we don't know. That is, yes. So then, now, because he is cultured and intelligent and trained, then when you have a doubt, you go to somebody. And you go to somebody qualified. So Arjuna could understand, here's Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the most qualified. So he should instruct me what to do. Right? So he's not worried, oh, here's Krishna, and, you know, he's just my friend, and not only that, just even as far as prestige, he's in a less position. You know, like that, and that he always, you know, plays with them and jokes and laughs. But he says, no. You know, Krishna knows he's God, so he should explain to me what to do. And Krishna then says, you know, that Krishna's not, you know, so impressed, so he just continues to reiterate the point. And then, magic cup. And then he surrenders to Krishna, and then Krishna starts to instruct him. So now in instructing him, then he brings out the point that there is a soul, and there's a body, they're different. The soul cannot be killed, the body can be killed. So these two are there. One should know that there's a soul and there's a body, and there's a difference. And that the body is, and the soul is not the one doing the killing. It's the body that's doing the killing. There's one body and another. In other words, the gross and subtle bodies are interacting with the modes of material nature. So these things are going on. Yeah, and these things are disturbances. He's saying there's going to be happiness and distress gained from this battle. And Krishna is saying, we're not the body, we're the soul. So why do you worry about this happiness and distress? Why are you in anxiety about all this? So he's saying that this is not proper. Neither are you doing the killing, neither are they being killed. Who you know as Bhishma is eternal soul. Who you know as Drona is eternal soul. Their bodies may be killed. But that's not a problem. Just like if somebody is having, and we go through changes of body anyway. We're going to change bodies anyway. When you're young, when you're very small, then it changes into when you're young. When you're young, it changes into youth. Youth into maturity. Maturity into old age. Those bodies are changing anyway, and you can't get them back. So someone may say, so what do you care if they die, right? It's changing anyway. It's just another change. Someone may complain, okay, going from being a childhood into youth is very nice, and maybe into maturity, but not into old age. So this change isn't good. But if they go from old age into youth again, because you go to the heavenly planets, they don't go through the childhood and all this stuff. They don't mess around. It's just when you're born, then immediately you become 16 years of age. You know, immediately you're ready to, you know, enjoy yourself. You know? None of this messing around with diapers and other stuff like that, you know. When they say heavenly planets, I mean heavenly planets. No diapers, no crying babies, none of this. Right? So he's saying they're going to go from old age to youth. So no one's going to complain about that. So neither the soul is dying and the body is changing anyway in this life. Now it's going to change from old to youth. So what's your problem? Then, and this anxiety you have about happiness, distress, you have to tolerate that. Anyway, there's happiness and stress. It's hot out sometimes, it's cold out sometimes, things go this way, that way. That's going on anyway. So this is just another occasion for tolerating. So that should go on. Then he says, even if you're not worried about the soul, you don't, even we take it from the point of not even believing in the soul. Right? The body is just chemicals, it's the interaction of the material elements. Then what does it matter anyway? If the material elements just transform, who's complaining? Right? There's no loss, there's no... Just energy is... One energy is... Energy is just transforming. There's nothing to lament about. And then he brings it to the point of... Now the best thing is to do your duty for the sake of duty. Right? Do that fight for the sake of fighting without... considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat, and by doing this you shall never incur sin. So now he's answered, you're saying you're going to incur sin by killing relatives, but you do your duty without desiring gain, there's no sin. Sin can only come if you want gain. Right? In the introduction then it's explained that when you have karma is a combination of time and the modes. Time means there's movement. When you have time, it means something's going on. So activity is there. Otherwise, if there's no time, nothing's happening. Right? Before time enters the material world, it's pradana. But when time and the living entities and the ego enter, things start to move. So movement is time. So when you have movement or activity that is under the modes of material nature, you get karma. So if it's in the mode of goodness, you know, then you'll get a pious result, or goodness mixed with little passion, also pious, passion, ignorance, and less, and then ignorance, sinful. So like this, is then there will be difficulties there from this. There will be reaction. Even if it's done nicely, he's saying just be in the mode of goodness, go off to the forest. Still there's reaction. Because you've given up your duty. Krishna explains later. You give up your duty because it'll be difficult. That's the mode of passion. So if I'm supposed to do something, I don't want to do it because it's difficult. That's renunciation, the mode of passion. So passion gives pain. So even you think you're going to the forest to live a peaceful lifestyle, you're not. It's passion that you're going to the forest, not goodness. Right? And it's ignorance of your duty, therefore there's sin. Right? There'll be pain when you go to the forest because of the passion, there'll be sin incurred. So therefore, he says you just do the duty because you're supposed to do the duty. But if you do it without attachment, then it means there's no modes. Attachment means the modes of nature. No attachment means there's no modes. It's that simple. In the material world, if you have two things you can endeavor for, senses or the emotions. Like this. So if you endeavor for either one of those, then there'll be a reaction. Right? That means you have to have a desire. You want some relationship, some position, something for the senses. You want something. Now if you do work without desiring result, that means there's time, but there's no modes. So you can't get karma, just by definition. You know? Right? Just by definition. Just like if I say a lassi is, you take yogurt and you mix it with sugar and, you know, mix it very nicely. Now if I have yogurt or I have sugar, I can't call either one of those a lassi. It's only a loss if you mix. So karma only happens, and karma means pious and impious. It can only happen when you mix time and the modes. Then you can get karma. So if there's time, means you perform activities, but there's no desire, there's no reaction. So this means that it's free from karma. So this is why the devotee. So then this goes into this, into. Yeah. Ah, yes. So this is what is the preliminary of what Krishna is given. In other words, then after that, he goes into... so now he's introducing this nishkam karma. That you perform your duty without desire, with knowledge. That's why he spoke in this section on knowledge, jnana. Is that you should understand what's going on. People are doing their karmakanda, they're doing their activities for attachment and without real knowledge. Because they actually think they'll be happy on the heavenly planets. I'll live for millions of lifetimes, you know. Here I only live for 100 lifetimes. There I live for 1,000,000 lifetimes. I get to the heavenly planets, and then what happens? That lifespan that I'm there, to me, only seems like 100 years. It may be millions of years here on Earth. But to me, up there, it's only 100 years. So it's actually, I don't have knowledge that I'm doing this karmakanda. If I actually knew what was the actual results, there'd be a tendency I wouldn't do it. So here it's with knowledge, with detachment, you work. Then there's no reactions, no sin. And with this knowledge, you can elevate yourself. And, yeah. So this is here he's only pointed out the nishkam karma, and that you work without desire. But now, then he goes into the back into the relationship, and that as a kshatriya, they're happy to fight. Here comes a fighting experience. You say you're going to be unhappy. Kshatriyas are happy fighting. You know. So what is your problem? Why you would be in anxiety about this? So they like to fight. They like to fight. And then if you don't fight, others are going to criticize you. So therefore, you fight. Right? Kshatriyas are happy fighting. You know? And if you don't fight, you'll be more unhappy by the infamy you'll get. Therefore, you just fight for the sake of fighting. Right? Without this attachment. This brings us now to continuing from where we left yesterday, is that this section then is called Buddhi Yoga, and here Burijan says Krishna explains Buddhi Yoga, Nishkan Karma, wherein one works karma with knowledge, jnana, and is thus detached from the fruit of his work. So this is okay. Then 39. Thus far I've described this knowledge to you through analytical study. Now listen as I explain it in terms of working without fruit of results. O son of Prita, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of works. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution. And a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. So here he's given, you know, the introduction to this nishkam karma here. Is that before he's just given analytical, he's just arguing. Because Arjuna is just presenting Shastra and his logic, a logical explanation. So Krishna is doing the same. You just say, okay, what you said, I've already defeated you. So up to this point, whatever Arjuna has said has been defeated. You don't know you're not the body. Body is going to die. Even if you don't kill them, now they're going to die anyway. So you're lamenting for what's not worth lamenting about. You know? Kshatriyas like to fight. You know? Then all, you know, you'll be infamous anyway. They're not going to believe that you're just so compassionate and such a great Vaishnav. They're just going to laugh. So he defeats all the arguments there. But now he presents actual proper, you know, some going above this. He says, now I've done analytically. You know, I've just just gone through like this. Now we're going to discuss how you can become free from the bondage. Because Arjuna is talking about the bondage. You know, I have the duties to the family, I have duties to my elders, all these different things, and all these things you're doing because you'll get a result. I'll be happy, someone else will be happy, the family will be happy, the forefathers will be happy, the country will be happy. But he's pointing out, no, this is not the real way to be happy. Because no one's happy from this material thing. So he's pointing out that you have to work, do work without bondage. It means this nishkam karma. Then he says that if you endeavor for this, there's no loss. It never goes away. Material will go away. We see, Arjuna's here, all these kings will be killed. You know, Vedic culture is just disappearing. Kali Yuga's around the corner. It's lost. It's gone. But we see here that in this path, there's no loss. No loss on this path. And one becomes, those who are resolute in purpose, then they know, then, they have one aim, and the mind is peaceful. While those who don't, their mind's all over the place because they have so many material desires. You know, as Krishna will explain later. So here, this point is brought out very much here, this vyavasayatmika buddhi, this fixed one-pointed intelligence. Krishna keeps coming back to this, like that. And even Prabhupada brings out from the Bhagavatam, he mentions the 3 and 4 purport. The whole matter is concluded in the Bhagavad Gita 2.41 as vyavasayatmika buddhi, or the absolute path of perfection. Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan defines this as Bhagavat Archana Rupaika Nishkama Karmabhir Vishuddha Chittaha. Accepting transcendental loving service to the Lord as the prime duty, free from fruit of action. So this is the essence of the thing. Fixing the mind on one point. Now he hasn't really made it clear what that one point is, but he's just taking Arjuna through step by step. He's mentioned the karma and jnana. Now he's saying, again, karma and jnana. This is a very interesting point. This will come up. Yeah, we'll discuss that after. So here is quotes from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, because Prabhupada read this in the 1950s, before he started, the act of preaching and all this. And this particular purport of Vishwanath struck him. And then he was saying that this made him very resolute in his determination to carry out the order of his spiritual master. So we'll read that here. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, "Of all kinds of intelligence, the best is intelligence focused on bhakti yoga. In bhakti yoga, one's intelligence becomes single-pointed or fixed in determination. One thinks, the instructions of my spiritual master to worship the personality of Godhead by chanting, remembering, serving his lotus feet, and so on, are my only sadhana, my only sadhya, my only livelihood. I am unable to give up these instructions either in the stage of practice or in the stage of perfection. They alone are my object of desire and my only responsibility. Besides them, I can desire no other responsibility, not even in my dreams. It is all the same to me whether I feel happy or unhappy, or whether my material existence is eradicated or not." So this mood, then one becomes a fixed devotee. This is a very essential point, this vyavasayatmika buddhi. Because he's opening up, it's natural, someone who's master, when they open up the discussion, they'll give you what is the essence so you know what's being talked about. Then they'll get into the details of it and then give you conclusion. So here, this point is very essential. Fixing the mind on Krishna alone, and that means fixing the mind on the instructions of the spiritual master. Then one actually gets somewhere. Because otherwise, if the mind is somewhere else, maybe on the instructions, maybe on this, maybe on that, there's unlimited material desire. It can take one all over the place. Right? So now Krishna will explain this in the next set of verses. where he asks us to rise above the modes and understand the purpose behind the Vedas. Text 42 and 43. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so on. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. O Arjuna, become a transcendental to these three modes. Be free from all dualities and free from all anxieties, for gain and safety, and be established in the self. All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served by to one who knows the purpose behind him. So here is Arjuna's been quoting the Vedas. But those who are of small knowledge, then they are attached to the results of the Vedas. Right? The results are dealing with mainly with the three modes of nature, Krishna says here. Right? Dealing mainly the Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Though they give the essence that it's to go back to Godhead. So this, what is being given here in the Gita? Gita is known as Gita Upanishad. Like that. So it's considered as the essence of all the Upanishads. And the essence is the philosophy of the Veda. Because in the Veda, everything is there. The Karmakanda, the Jnanakanda, Upasanakanda. And Upasanakanda also includes worship of the demigods. Like that. So, but in there is the worship of Vishnu. But it's not so clear, because people are in the material world because they want to enjoy. They want to control. So it's so many things are there. So in the Upanishads, it makes it very clear that one must give up the material attachment and go for spiritual. But even there, it is not always so clear that that means surrendering to Vishnu, surrendering to the Lord. So the Gita makes that very clear. It gives the knowledge of the Upanishads, but very clearly that it means devotional service. So the Gita is giving the essence of the Veda. Like that. So it's natural that the Veda will deal like this. So Krishna is telling him, give up your attachment to the Vedas like this. That you're doing things for this purpose. And it's interesting, he also mentions that who are too much attached to sense enjoyment and material opulences, and who are bewildered by such things. So someone may be attached but not bewildered. To some degree, they're attached. It's comfortable, it's easy. But they know it's not good, it's Maya. Such a person can start to take up. You can preach to them, and they can get the determination to take up devotional service. But someone who's attached and bewildered by them, even you preach, they cannot get that determination. Okay. So if there's proper knowledge, then one won't become bewildered. Like that. And then it's very interesting. So he says, be free from all dualities, because pious result is gain, sinful is loss. So one has to give up the dualities that come from gain and loss, the anxieties, all the different things that deal with the material world, that the Vedas deal with, or any branch of material knowledge. Then he says, all purposes served by a small well can be served by a great pond. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives interesting comment that in India, you go to the villages, they have different wells, and each well is for a different purpose. One well is only for drinking water. No one will go there to wash clothes. Another one is for washing clothes, and you won't do anything else there. Another one is for washing utensils, because utensils are dirty and messy. So no one wants to wash your clothes where the utensils were, because it leaves black and a little oily, like that. Plus, you don't want your drinking water. Right? And another place is for bathing. Because when people are bathing, it goes all over the people who are washing the pots of the clothes. And when people are washing clothes, then it splatters on people who are bathing, or the pots make a mess all over. So he says there are different wells. But he says if you have a big lake or a river, some big body of water, you can do all four of them simultaneously. They can all be going on in this pond, like that. So you don't have to, so what you get, the purposes that are served by the small is greater than the greater. So as you move from the aparavidya to the paravidya, from the material knowledge to the transcendental knowledge, whatever is to be gained in the material knowledge is already there, present in the spiritual. It's the source. It's already there. Like that. Everything is there. So this is very important, because when we approach knowledge, we have to know what's the purpose behind it. So even if we use material knowledge, we have to be able to use, we have to be able to take from it what is useful, actually, for advancing in Krishna consciousness. Because we're only dealing with the material nature to advance in Krishna consciousness, not for any other reason. That's all. So then Krishna goes on here. Then, about now we must work without attachment for the Lord. Text 47. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. Perform your duty equipoised, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga. O Dhananjaya, keep all abominable activities far distant by devotional service, and in that consciousness surrender unto the Lord. Those who want to enjoy the fruits of their work are misers. A man engaged in devotional service rids himself of both good and bad actions even in this life. Therefore, strive for yoga, which is the art of all work. By thus engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in this material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead. When your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. When your mind is no longer disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas, and when it remains fixed in the trance of self-realization, then you will have attained the divine consciousness. So Krishna is stating here that we take this path of karma, we take this path of jnana, but they have purposes, material purposes. We give up those purposes and perform them both simultaneously. This is the interesting thing, is the karmi takes one or the other for material purpose. And that keeps them in the material world. Right? Because in one, you have knowledge but no activity. Right? So how are you going to actually engage yourself? Because you have your conditioned nature. The other, you have activity but no real knowledge. So both of them are incomplete on their own. So devotional service means you take the activity, you take the knowledge, you combine those without attachment. So that means now there's no material reaction, no sin, no piety. And you do it for Krishna with that one point of determination. That gets you out of the material world. So it's like the principle of a thorn with a thorn. You take out the thorn. One thorn takes out another thorn. You get a thorn, you take it out with another. But you have to know how to use it. So this is a very essential point, very interesting point, that the Prabhupada mentions it many times, that the same thing that makes you sick, you take the same thing and it cures you. You take too much milk, you take that same milk but in the form of yogurt and it will cure. You take too much milk, you get a bad stomach. You take yogurt, it'll cure it. It's like this. Many times the what causes the disease, then if it's applied in the proper way, it cures the disease. Like that. So this, So here the point is what causes our disease is the desire for karma and jnana and the results we get from that. So it's not the activity that is the problem. Right? The problem is the consciousness and the desire for the result. That is what gives the problem in the material world. We desire a material result. And because of that, that binds us. Well, if we don't desire a material result, it frees us. Even if we don't know Krishna, right? We just do the duties without material desire, we'll be brought to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Right? It'll just come to that platform because there's nothing to bind you. Right? Binding means that you're doing something that keeps you in the material world. Brahma-Bhuta means you're not attached or connected with the material world. So by performing nishkam karma, even without thinking of Krishna, you will come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. So that's what Krishna mentioned before, when he's just going analytically through things. He's just saying, sin, and you want to be happy, this, that, but this is not real happiness. And you're going to be, and your reactions that you're worried about is binding here. But your solutions are also binding. Right? So he's saying, rise above all that. And he's saying that you become bewildered by the flowery language of the Vedas. It doesn't mean we reject the Vedas and don't follow the Vedas, but the flowery language of the Vedas that we give up. Flowery language is for the fools. It's like this. You have a class of people they want to enjoy here. Or they're upset with enjoying here because they wanted to enjoy. They couldn't enjoy the senses, so the only alternative that will please them is to become God. I can't be the supreme enjoyer, then let me be the supreme controller. Right? Like this. Because the living entity is here because he wants to control and enjoy. These are the two qualities that keep him in the material world. So karma just means the emphasis is on the enjoyment, and jnana means the emphasis is on the control. Got the thread of thought. It's a problem with tangents. That's why one must appreciate, because we look at the Bhagavatam or the Gita and we see that the storyline is going, and to us it seems it's going all over the place. It's not at all chronological in that. But it is. It's going through a definite state, step-by-step presentation. But as you introduce a new point, there's so many things that you have to back up and explain and remove doubts and all that, questions come up about, that they go into so many stories. So you're explaining one story, and in that story there's another story that explains one point in that story. And so that they can keep that thread and always come back, that is exceptional. As I find many times when I go off explaining a side point that backs up or supports the main point, I didn't forget what the main point was. This just happened. So if anyone remembers, then... Okay, well, whatever, we'll continue. It's all... As Prabhupada mentions, no matter where you start, it's all sweet, so... Forget that one. Yeah, so he's mentioning here, just don't be attached to the duty. And don't be bewildered by the Vedas. Right? Oh, that was the point. Is that these people are going to perform all kinds of sinful and nasty things just for their own senses. Just to please themselves. So to keep the universe regulated so that at least everything goes peacefully. Just like in a jail. If you just had one big wall, and that was all, and then stuck all the prisoners inside, it would be a riot. So to maintain, you know, maintain just at least the decency of how they'll deal and all that, you have to make all the different cells and all the different rules and who goes what where, and they march in lines. There's so many things. So as long as they follow the rules, the prison is peaceful. They don't follow the rules, it's chaos. It's a riot. So same way as if you follow the Vedic injunctions, then at least everyone tries as much as possible to come as close to the standard of piety. And in piety, you generally don't bother someone else, though you may be a gross materialist. So therefore, it's recommended that one follow these things. Otherwise, if they weren't there, they'd be nonsense. So the Vedas and other Vedic literatures then present it in such a way that people with this demoniac mentality become attracted by the benefits of being pious, so they follow it. Otherwise they wouldn't. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, don't be bewildered by this language, because it's not meant for devotees. This is meant for the karmis. This is meant for the sinful people. So you don't become bewildered. You fix your mind. Right? You become fixed that this is not at all what the shastras are for. You're quoting shastra, but this is not what the shastras are for. Shastras is simply for going back to Godhead. So you must become this vyavasayatmika buddhi, one-pointed intelligence. Then you'll become happy. You'll become free. Like that. Okay. And here he mentions is that says those who want to enjoy the fruits, they're misers. Because the fruit is not theirs. You know, it's just like you have a whole big family and everybody is working and everyone brings in something. And then one brother wants to keep his, another brother wants to keep his. It's misers. It's shared with the family. So the we want to keep the fruits of our work, but it's given to us by Krishna. And we don't want to share that with Krishna. So this is very miserly. And then it says here, perform your duty equipoised, O Arjuna. Abandon all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is yoga. Now, this is an important point, because this is the definition of yoga. Where there's attachment, we get rid of our attachment, all material attachments, that's yoga. Because yoga means to link with the Supreme. That actually creates the link. It's not what we're doing, because the materialist sees the body, sees the externals. Therefore, then you must make all this external stuff and people will think, yes, this is yoga, right? I stand on my head, I push my nose, I do all kinds of things, you know, difficult, and a yajna that's so difficult, you know, very complicated, and, you know, takes so many brahmins over so many, you know, months or years to perform, and one syllable goes wrong, and, you know, there's that sense of gambling, you know, there's that sense of difficulty. You get some satisfaction on something that was very difficult, you did it, and it came out okay. It gives a satisfaction. So the materialist gets caught up in this. But that's not yoga. Right? They've done the activity, but it's not yoga. Yoga is when they link with the Supreme. So here he's saying, do this work. Such equanimity is called yoga. And he says, therefore strive for yoga, which is the art of all work. All work means whatever you're doing, the purpose is yoga, connecting with the Supreme. So this section here then is telling to that it's not what the Vedas are saying, it's connecting with the Supreme in detachment, because of the detachment from that and doing it for the Lord. That is the yoga. That is the actual yoga. And when you don't become bewildered, if someone else talks about it, you don't become attracted. You can hear anything, see anything. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made this point on his final instructions. He says, don't be, disheartened that most people that you'll see around you aren't interested in Krishna consciousness. They're interested in Sanskrit. Don't be disturbed. You know what your work is and do that. Stick to the order of Rupa and Raghunath. And just do that. So he's making this point, vyavasayatmika buddhi. And not being, you don't care what you heard in the past, what others are going to come and tell you now. You don't care. You know what you're supposed to do. So that makes this section is them. And then, yeah. Then he goes into the next section, which Burijan Prabhu calls samadhi, that by working in buddhi yoga, that you actually come to the transcendental platform. That is what is desired. So now Krishna is going to bring out very strongly the points about taking up devotional service. Like that. So this is text 56. Is 56 through? Excuse me. 54. 54 through 71. So now Arjuna asks some questions and Krishna gives answers. Arjuna said, "O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak and what is his language? How does he sit and how does he walk?" The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "O Partha," it's very interesting here, is that Vishwanath points out that these questions, there's four questions here. What is the symptoms of one whose consciousness is merged in transcendence? Then, how does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? And how does he walk? So, Vishwanath points out that there's a meaning behind this. It's not that he just wants to know how he stands up and sits down and, you know, how he speaks and if he has a dialect or, you know, anything like that. But he points out that each of these has a particular meaning. Like that. So, the first one, Krishna just is directly answers that. That is, what is the symptom of one in this consciousness? This 55. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness." So you can see from the outside is that they're not interested in sense gratification. It's a mental concoction. That we think we're going to enjoy is a mental concoction. It hasn't happened in the past, it doesn't happen today, it won't happen in the future. We've heard of enjoying. Nobody's ever really enjoyed. Right? A moment. But that's it. No, nothing. So you can't call a moment when there's an ocean of difficulty. Right? Just like the man is under the water. You hold him under the water until he's just about ready to die. You pull him out for a second, he takes a breath. That breath is so nice for him. And then you stick him back under the water. Now if after you do that for about half hour and pull the guy out, and you ask him, "So did you enjoy yourself?" He'll say it was hellish. But you say, but you really enjoyed taking that breath. You know? So yeah, but that was what? So many times, 10 times in that half hour. But those 10 moments don't balance that half an hour of that just hellish. So that's it. We just become conditioned to think that moment we breathe is really, really nice. So because they've given up this desire, the mind is peaceful. Krishna brings that out later. The one who understands that Krishna is the controller, the enjoyer, and the friend of everyone, he is peaceful. And when there's peace, then there's happiness. This will come up. So then, now the next question, when he says, "How does he speak? What is his language?" Then Vishwanath points out that this means, how does he react to others dealing with him? Right? Does he get upset? Is he positive? Is he neutral? How does he deal? So it's not just how does he speak. Because speaking, we'll call someone a gentleman because of the way they speak. But you know that is because how they react to you. Right? A gentleman, you may even deal with them a little roughly. And they're just, they may be firm, but they don't react back and get violent and all that. That we'll just consider more ordinary. But someone is, a very trained person, they don't react like this. So 56, 57. "One who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. In the material world, one who is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may attain, neither praising it or despising it, is firmly fixed in knowledge." So he's not affected. If people deal nicely with them, or people deal roughly with them, it doesn't really matter. Because he just sees, it's just the modes of nature. The modes of nature are interacting. And what gets upset? The soul gets upset if someone comes and insults you? No, the mind gets upset. The ego gets upset. So these are all under the control of the modes of nature. So one doesn't take it very seriously. Then one who is able to with now, then how does he sit? Sit is at his place, his kshetra. How is he situated in his place? You know, how is he situated in his body and in his environment? In other words, how is he situated in his environment? Like that. So Krishna then says, one who is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects, as the tortoise draws his limbs within the shell, is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. The embodied soul, may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination, who is endeavoring to control them. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. So now, a further definition of this vyavasakyatmika buddhi means you control the senses. You don't take the senses very seriously. Because otherwise, if you even contemplate on one sense, it can take you away. And this is a man of discrimination. Discrimination here, already Krishna has thrown out earlier in the Gita Arjuna and how he's behaving and speaking as non-Aryan. So that's not a man of discrimination. So discrimination means someone who's fixed and endeavoring to control the senses. They have knowledge, they're endeavoring. So even a person like this fixes the mind on the senses, they can be carried away. This is important to note. Because otherwise the idea is that once you become advanced, nothing can ever happen, right? It means when I'm neophyte, I'm a person. I'm a personality, I have an individuality, I interact with things, I'm a person. But as I advance, I lose my personal nature. I'm not an individual, I no longer have any senses, I no longer have a mind or intelligence or ego, I just become a mushroom, right? An advanced transcendental mushroom. But I myself have no feelings, desires, nothing. And it's not that the person is in an advanced position because he's controlling the senses. Right? It just somehow or another mystically happens. And then if they have a difficulty and get swept away by it, it's because they were actually not advanced. They were just, you know, pretenders. Like that. They were just like us. No. They fixed their mind. Right? The man of intelligence is all over the place. Those who are the Veda Vadaratas, they have so many desires, they can't fix their mind in any one place. So it's just like they're always in the position of fallen mediocrity. Right? But the man who endeavors to control the senses and fix the mind, then that mind is strong. If it fixes in one place, it can make a lot of problems. Therefore, he says that one should, by a higher taste, control. So that means we have to emphasize those things that give taste. And what gives taste? Not position, not authority, not all these different things. But the devotional activities, the association of devotees, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deity, living in the Dham. You know, these things, these are what give the taste. That interaction with devotees. Training devotees, being trained by devotees, associating and sharing one's realization with others. This is the real taste. You know? In other words, relationship to Krishna. Then the mind can stay fixed. But otherwise, the living entity by definition is ananda. He must find happiness. So you either find it in Krishna or you'll find it in Maya. There's not an alternative. I mean, you can try for the Brahman. That's the alternative many try to take. But for the devotee, that's not very attractive. So the emphasis must be there. We have to be very careful is that if we have an idea that people are having difficulty, we don't then take away those things that create taste. We have to ensure that those things that create material taste are taken away, or situations that create are taken away, and things that create spiritual taste are increased. That means we know the process. Otherwise, we don't. So then, yeah. So this is here is that. Now here also is very interesting. Here, this is the first time now Krishna has pointed out that it's meditation on him. Up to this point, he's been very neutral. You know, talking to Vedas and Jnana and working without attachment and controlling the senses, and this is what a transcendental person is. But now in this verse, in 61, one who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control and fixes his consciousness upon me, he is known as a man of steady intelligence. So this is the key. So you're controlling the senses, you have this knowledge, and you're working with detachment, but you cannot actually be steady intelligence until you're a devotee. So actually only the devotee can be the transcendentalist. Therefore, those who endeavor for the transcendental, the jnanis, are counted as transcendentalists, but they're not actually as serious, because it's temporary, their endeavor, because at one point they'll fall. Because they haven't concentrated on Krishna. So only the devotee is the real transcendentalist, the real yogi. Because he works without attachment, thinking of Krishna. That's how the detachment comes. You're doing it for Krishna. Right? Arjuna has to make the decision between working for Krishna. Fighting. See, now he's thinking, I'll fight, I'll get a bad result. So that's his platform of fighting. Then the next stage that Krishna is saying is, you fight because it's your duty. And you do without attachment, there'll be no sin. And you'll be elevated to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. But then the next stage is, I'm fighting because it pleases Krishna. That is bhakti. Okay? So this nishkam karma, if our goal is to get to Krishna, is called bhakti. But even nishkam karma, without the goal to become Krishna conscious, is just the actual form of Brahmavad. That is the difference between Brahmavad and Mayavad. The Brahmavad, he performs his activities, but without attachment. He can go to the Brahman. Or if he's fortunate, he'll come in contact with devotees, like the four Kumaras, or Sukadeva Goswami. But it becomes devotional service, because from the beginning you want to get that goal. So it's counted. It's within the fold of bhakti. Right? But we can see also, just for our own development, that the stages are there. As I'm doing it, because if I do it in this way, there won't be a reaction and all these things, and I'll be happy. But ultimately it's, no, this makes Krishna happy. Whether I'm happy or not doesn't matter. If Krishna's happy, that makes me happy. Then it comes to the platform of devotion. But that comes when we reach the Brahma-Bhuta platform. So the nishkam karma will bring us to that platform of Brahma-Bhuta, from where we will be very easily able to surrender fully to Krishna. Does that make some sense? This point? On how? Because see, Vishwanath is pointing out that when you do it for Krishna, do your duties for Krishna because it pleases Krishna, that becomes the bhakti. But when you're doing it without the attachment and all that, but you don't have that completely fixed on Krishna, it means there may be other things there. Still the nartas and other things are there. That's nishkam karma. He makes a distinction. Because he's trying to point out that we have to continue. And it's not just because we've started nishkam karma, then you know everything's finished. It would be like this. Let us say we have 20 steps to get up into a building. And you can look at it from two ways. One is you're in the building when you're in the door. The other is you're going up the steps. You know, you're going to be in the door. So when we say you're entering the building, we count the stairs also. Right? If you're walking on the sidewalk, you're not entering the building. But as soon as you step on the stairs heading for the door, we'll say he's going to enter the building. He's entering the building. He's going through the preliminaries. Now, that is the general way that we will deal. He stepped on the step, he's going towards the door, everyone can say he's going to be in the building. So it's a common thing to look. But now, if the person stops there and thinks, yes, I'm in the building, see how special I am, then you tell them, excuse me, my dear sir, but when you walk through that door, then you're in the building. Don't think you're in the building when you're standing on the steps. So therefore, Vishwanath takes this point. because he wants to show that you have to keep going. Otherwise, the neophyte, he'll take to it, he'll be encouraged. Like if I just tell you, devotional service starts at Brahma-Bhuta, who's going to become a devotee? Who's going to come from being a malecha and then become a pure devotee on the spot? Right? Then we don't need the whole process of sadhana and everything. If you go through all those things, who's going to do it? If it's understood that this whole process is devotional service, you're getting credit for it. Every endeavor is not lost. Then you think, yes, I can get involved in this. And it's all devotional. I understand the best is there. So when that honesty is there, the system works very, very nicely. Okay, so this is how he controls this. This is how he situates himself in his environment. Means later we'll learn about the kshetra, the field of activities. So he becomes situated in his field of activities. But one always remembers the super soul is there, and one's not the doer. So this is what's being, that's how he situates himself. Then the positive aspects here, then are... yes, now he says, now how does he walk and all these things? Then means, how is he going to engage with everything else now? Right? Means one, he's not affected. The first one, he's not affected by the surroundings. How is he affected? He's not affected. Then how does he situate himself with controlled senses? Now how does he interface? How does he perform his duties? So this is the next ones. Oh, excuse me. No, now Krishna is going to tell Arjuna what happens to that person who doesn't control the senses. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. From anger, complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. So that's, in other words, the senses get connected with the sense objects and one gets attached to them. It means we're in the body, senses are going to connect with sense objects. That's going to go on. That's not whether we become attached to that or not. If we become attached, then we become bewildered, right? Because lust comes, lust, anger, and from anger, then, yeah, delusion. We think we can't tell what's right or not. So when you can't tell what's right or wrong, that means the memory is gone. And the memory is part of intelligence. As soon as the memory is gone, because intelligence is just working on all these facts and figures, what is gained, what we call knowledge. So you forget, it means you can't remember this knowledge. So intelligence is lost, and then one falls down just completely into material life. So now here he tells the positive thing. Then how he interacts. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control the senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. For one thus satisfied in Krishna consciousness, the threefold miseries of material existence exist no longer. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon well established. One who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace, and how can there be any happiness without peace? As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. Therefore, O mighty armed, one whose senses are restrained from their objects is certainly of steady intelligence. What is night for all beings in the time of awakening is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. A person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship, and is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. So now, this few nice points come out here is that he's making the point is that through the regulative principles of freedom. So that means one is following regulation, one is following the scriptures. It is not that one is just doing anything. So this is a process, and it has a way to be done. It must be followed. Right? Then, and it says one who is satisfied in Krishna consciousness, there's no three modes of nature, because he's not interacting with them. We've already pointed out. It does not mean that they're not there. As is pointing out, it's just like the ocean is not disturbed by all the incessant flow of rivers into it. So many desires are coming, but we're not disturbed. We don't care. That's the point. We think the mind will just stop thinking all nonsense. No, it'll continue thinking it's nonsense, but after a while we don't care. You know, just like the kid goes on playing and yelling and screaming, but after a while we don't care. It doesn't matter. So the point is the mind goes on saying this, it goes on saying that. Who cares? So now, one who is Krishna conscious, one who fixes connected with the Supreme, only that person can have a steady mind. Right? And without the steady mind, there can be no peace. So then in this point here, what he makes here is that a person has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship and devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. So this means he's got peace, means it also has to be in relationship to Krishna, because he's just said it in the previous verse. So it can't be separate. So it means one who's thinking of Krishna, connected to Krishna, devoid of false ego, sense of proprietorship, free from desires for sense gratification. Performing his duty means he's doing, following the regulative principles of of freedom. He is successful. Right? So here he's basically concluded the whole thing. Conclusion here is that is the way of the spiritual and godly life, 72, after attaining which a man is not bewildered. One is thus situated, even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. So this is the point. We're trying to get to this platform. You'll see this theme, because this is the summary of the whole Gita. All these themes of all these aspects are going to come up again and again. Like that. It's just giving different angles or different details that have not been explained up to now. This is just very short. Because now we will continue, next chapter. Arjuna now will start to ask questions again. He's just asked his first set of questions. He's recognized there's a transcendental person. How does this person behave? Right? So Krishna says, he's always Krishna conscious. He's detached. He controls the senses. He's free from ego. He follows the activities, but with knowledge, he serves Krishna. Right? So then Arjuna is satisfied with this. But we see he becomes still bewildered. Srila Prabhupada writes, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has summarized the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita as being the contents for the whole text. In Bhagavad Gita, the subject matters are Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. In the second chapter, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga have been clearly discussed, and a glimpse of Bhakti Yoga has also been given as the contents for the complete text. Yeah. And it's mentioned here that Priyavrata Maharaj is given as an excellent example of the person who is described like this. He's situated in his kingdom, running the whole universe, but at the same time, as he's not attached. He's free from desires, free from ego. He knows Krishna is the doer. He knows the results are Krishna's, the ability is Krishna's, and he's doing it for Krishna. So he is satisfied. Even though he has all opulences and everything, this is very important to understand. If we don't understand this, then the brahmacharis can never understand how someone can be a grihastha and make progress in spiritual life. Because they'll say, oh, they have so much facility for sense gratification. What has this got to do with Krishna consciousness? And the grihasthas will never understand the sannyasis. in the vanaprasthas, who may use facilities in preaching in the preaching service. So this is a very essential point to understand. Right? Otherwise, Brahmins will think Kshatriyas are nonsense. You know, the Vaishyas will think the Kshatriyas are nonsense, or the Shudras will think they're nonsense. They got all the wealth, all the facility. Kshatriyas will think the Vaishyas are, they have so much, they keep it themselves, they're not using it for others, it's just for themselves. The Kshatriya thinks, I use it for others. And the Brahmin is thinking, all these Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Shudras, they're just keeping so much stuff, they're all nonsense. Like this. So, unless one understands this point, that it's yoga means you do it connected to the Supreme, following the rules and regulations. So whatever the rules and regulations are for your situation, that being performed without attachment, with knowledge, means knowing who you are, without false ego, doing for Krishna, that is perfection. So that is what's being pointed out here. Any questions, comments? That bad.
Has happened for the year. Prabhupada also comments on that, that he read that translation first. And he said he actually founded the International Society of Krishna Consciousness on the basis of this.
On the basis of this verse.
The determination of the spiritual masters.
Yeah, so it's also very interesting to point that out, how Prabhupada started ISKCON with this verse, and we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's final instruction is basically presenting this verse. You know, and what he was saying is now all of you cooperate and make a GBC and preach with this mentality. But then no GBC was made, so no cooperation was there. And the mission actually stopped until Prabhupada then started the mission based on this verse. In other words, there was just a gap of some years. But that verse is that connection, the continuation. So this makes us Saraswatis. Prabhupada says we're Saraswatis. Because we're specifically taking this mood of the Rupanugas. Of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we're Rupanugas. And of Rupanugas, we're Saraswatas. So it's like this is a very essential point. This fixed intelligence. Because if that's there, one doesn't become bewildered. Because if not, one becomes bewildered. It's that easy. It says, you're given 2 points. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one, a beloved child of the Kurus. The intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. And we see, if we're not fixed on the order of Guru, then we go all over the place. And if you check, many times if there's a disturbance, or bewilderment, because we're not actually fixed in what is the order of Guru. It's a very good point. Nice to hear Prabhupada founded it.
Another point. The Prabhupada's purport for that verse, at the very end of that, it's the whole process of Krishna consciousness. Depends on one's realization of the self beyond the body. It's not theoretically, but practically. And there's no more chance for engagement in fruitive activity. So he says, not theoretically, but practically. So sometimes, but he appears to be saying you've got to actually have realization of the body, of the self in the body.
Mm.
And should we be working towards that, or is it inclusive in the process? Or some devotees say, well, you don't need to worry about that, you know, you just continue doing your service, you know. That will come automatically.
Yeah. See, the point is, Prabhupada makes the thing is that there's no separate endeavor for these things. So, but I find that sometimes it's misunderstood. There's no separate endeavor. And devotees take it, there's no endeavor at all. Don't worry about it. It'll just happen. Right? What it means is that we do not separately, like the mayavadis or the karmis or this or that, endeavor for that quality separately. They just go out somewhere, sit down and try to just take, you know, Vedanta Sutra or something, try to understand they're not the body, intellectually, bus, no activity. They make purely an endeavor to understand that. There's no activity. You know? Or you will take a quality of humility, or tolerance, let's say tolerance. They go out and stand up to their neck in the middle of winter in a river, which is quite cold. You have to learn to tolerate the cold. You're freezing cold, but you learn to tolerate it, where it doesn't bother you. Or they'll sit in the middle of the day, in the middle of summer, you know, with fires surrounding them, you know, to learn to tolerate, learn tolerance. So this the devotee doesn't do. That means there's no separate endeavor. But it doesn't mean in the discharge of our duty that we're not conscious of what we're doing. Maybe in the very beginning, it's just enough that we're not breaking the four regulative principles and we're chanting Hare Krishna and we happen to be wearing our mother's bed sheets and, you know, at the temple taking prasadam. So for us, that may be it. But as one starts to develop, one must see. Otherwise, then we're saying, Prabhupada's saying, you must realize, which means vigyan, and vigyan comes from jnana. But what's being said is, no, we'll just do our activity, not even think about the jnana, but we're going to get vigyan. Now, if Krishna's saying, endeavor without false ego, without attachment, without desire, without thinking you're the doer, understanding Krishna is the ability. Now, is that just happening automatically, or are we having to endeavor to think like that? It means we have to endeavor. But we're endeavoring within the process. Right? It's part of the process, that endeavor. It goes together. You know? But we just say, oh, it's just like that. Okay, maybe in the very beginning. You know, but one made that endeavor to leave the material existence and take up Krishna consciousness. One made a serious choice. One made the endeavor, you know. You got in your car, or you got on the bus or the train, or you did something and went to where you made that choice. You took that endeavor. So how is it that the first step, now after that, is just going to run with no endeavor? Just automatic pilot. It's called Buddhi Yoga. Means they're using the intelligence. But it's not separate. This is the thing. It's buddhi yoga. It's connected to the Supreme, using your intelligence through activities. You know? So when you have knowledge, as Krishna points out, when you have knowledge and you have activity and it's done in devotion, you get realization. You know, at least transcendental. It's not at least to come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. You perform activity without attachment, you'll come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Like that. So, you know, anyone interested in the Brahman can do that. But now you endeavor, you do the activity without attachment for Krishna, then you go back to Godhead. Krishna's saying, even you remember at the time of death, you go. So that endeavor, that's what Krishna is telling him here. You must do. Okay. Otherwise, why is it everything else we must endeavor and use our intelligence, right? When you distribute books, you have to use your brain. No one tells you. You just take the books and go out there and don't worry about it. There's no separate. You don't have to endeavor to sell the books. It'll just happen. Don't worry. Or you want to manage your place? No, you just sit down there and it'll just happen. You don't have to endeavor. You don't have to use your intelligence. You know, it's not something you're cooking. Yeah, you just go in the kitchen and just, you just be there. It'll just happen. You know, it's amazing. You know, I do it all the time. I just go in the kitchen and just sit there and think, wow, you know, I'd like to do something nice for Krishna and all this and that. And then just suddenly this huge cake just manifests on the counter. And then I pick it up and take it in and offer it. No, you have to use your intelligence. You have to endeavor. You have to think, what is the best way? Arjuna wasn't just out there just, you know, picking up his bow and just shooting it anywhere. And he was thinking, this person is coming. He is shooting this weapon. What weapon do I have to shoot to counteract it? And then he's doing that. And this is all happening within, you know, a split second. So it's, the endeavor is there. But it's not separate from our service to Krishna. That is the meaning of there's no separate endeavor. Prabhupada doesn't say there's no endeavor, because Rupa Goswami says is enthusiasm means endeavor with intelligence. Utsahan is described with endeavor with intelligence. Now, Prabhupada then wouldn't say something that's not in line with Rupa Goswami. So he's saying you're endeavoring using your brain. So Prabhupada's saying there's no separate endeavor. It means I do my devotional service and then I separately got to figure out I'm not the body. Or, you know, Trinada Pisu Niche Nato or Nishadishnara. No, it's all included. That all inclusive means I'm endeavoring for it. It says here, one who tests. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution. He doesn't just say you just sit around and be a lazy bum. Otherwise, he would have said yes. See, otherwise Krishna would have said this. You want to fight for a material result. And you want to run away to the forest for a material result. Right? And you're sitting down here on the chariot because of material frustration. So now, fighting is an endeavor. And running away to the forest is an endeavor. But sitting down is no endeavor. The problem is your consciousness is wrong. You should just sit down without attachment. You know? Without ego. Like that. And then that's perfect. But Krishna didn't even consider that for a moment. In fact, he's already thrown out Gyan right in the beginning. It's one of the first things he does. He presents Gyan meaning the knowledge, but Gyan as the path of perfection, he automatically throws out. Because he says that Gyan doesn't give the realization. But you get the realization by the karma. So when you endeavor without attachment, you automatically get knowledge and renunciation. Jnana and Vairag. Therefore, it's better to perform activities without detachment. So this endeavor, he's always saying, those who are on this path are resolute. Path means it's dynamic, it's moving. Otherwise, he would say, those who are on this spot are resolute in purpose. Because you'd just be in one spot. You wouldn't be endeavoring. It says that you have a right to perform, this is funny, on this, 47, you have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause and results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. So this also, Arjuna doesn't want to do his duty. But you always hear, whenever we go to Indians' offices and we tell them about doing the things and, you know, doing some service, then they always quote this verse, only the first line. You know? Where is it? Just forgot it. No, it's with the Sanskrit. Karma neva vikaras te. They always quote that. They never say the next line, which is ma phaleshu kadachana, means the result you can't take. You know? That. They always, the first time, you know, karma nyeva dikadaste, Krishna says, you must do your duty. You have a right, you must do it. But they don't go on to the next part. So it says, the fruits aren't yours, don't think you're the doer, and don't be attached to not doing it. Like that. So we see here that this is the same point being made, but from a different angle. It says, do not, the results aren't yours. So in otherwise, we're saying, Krishna's saying, act, but don't be attached. But we're thinking, well, actually, I can be attached if I want, but if I want spiritual life, I don't be attached. But Krishna's pointing out here, he says, you're not even entitled to it, even if you think you are, because you're not the doer. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities. Because you think you're the cause and you're attached, therefore you get the sinful reaction. If you do the same activity, but without attachment, you know, not thinking that you don't want the fruit and you don't think you're the doer, there's no reaction. The reaction only comes because you think you're doing it. Otherwise, it doesn't exist, reaction. Reaction is only for those who think they've done it and the result is theirs. Then, because it's yours, you've done it, okay, here's the reaction that comes along with it. But because it's material consciousness, you get a material result. Well, if you have spiritual consciousness, Krishna is the doer, we are the instrument, and the result is Krishna's. Whatever comes is Krishna's. Facility or praise or anything is Krishna's. Then there's no reaction. But we see such a person become glorified. Arjuna is glorified for his inaction in action. I said it was funny. Life members always quote that verse. I can remember it's like every office we went into, they'd always quote this verse. You know, because we're telling you, you know, it's devotional service, this, that, and the thing is, no, I got to do my duty. You know, my duty is to make money. We're saying, fine. Now give some to Krishna. Now here, here's a nice one, here. 51, thus by engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great sages or devotees free themselves from the results of work in the material world. In this way, they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all miseries by going back to Godhead. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that detached work leads to realized knowledge of the soul. So this detached work means you have to endeavor to be attached and think about it to be not attached. That gives realization of the soul. That's how one comes to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Nishkam karma brings one to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. It's also here, points out, Bhujan. Dutiful, detached work and knowledge will protect him from the fruits coming from the activities. You know, like that. But we still have to be detached from it, because fruit may come. Fruit may come. But we have to be not attached.
He says you should be pray this pure language, immerse in the pure language, to rise above it. And there are some devotees also say that first you have to rise above, and at least come to the mode of goodness, then you can.
Because this point is if it's connected to Krishna, it's transcendental. If it's not, it's not. Krishna, the all these points come from the Gita generally, and Krishna is talking about all these different things. But his whole point is he's already established that here, right? It means. Later points that you establish don't negate your previous points. You may take it to higher and higher levels, but now he's talked about going beyond the Brahma-Bhuta platform to the devotional platform. So a lower platform wouldn't be injected later. You can go from a lower. Like Krishna starts off with jnana. Then he, you know, goes to karma. Then he says the real thing is the mixed two without attachment. Then he says, but the essence of that is to do it for Krishna. So establishing the mode of goodness, that is the safest position to work from. But if we look at the mode of goodness that's given, always equality is just done out of duty without attachment. You know, you'll see, it's just constantly. That's really nice. association, visions of faith. Yeah. The threefold austerity performed a transcendental faith by men not expecting material benefits but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme is called austerity in the mode of goodness. So we see here, no attachment, it's being done for the Supreme. Of sacrifice is sacrifice performed according to the direction of Scripture as a matter of duty by those who desire no reward is the mode of good, is the nature of goodness. Charity given out of duty without expectation of return at the proper time and place and to a worthy person is considered to be in the mode of goodness. Yeah, then he goes on to say, from the beginning of creation, the three words Om Tat Sat were used to indicate the Supreme Absolute Truth. These three symbolic representations were used by Brahmanas while chanting the hymns of the Vedas and during sacrifices for the satisfaction of the Supreme. Therefore, transcendentalists undergo performances of sacrifice, charity, and penance in accordance with the scriptural regulations, beginning always with Om to obtain the Supreme. So the mode of goodness without being connected to the Supreme Lord is useless. It'll get you to the Brahman platform. As you see, all of them, it's you're doing it according to scriptural rules in a detached mode. So we've already, Krishna's already pointed out in this second chapter that that is nishkam karma. In other words, working in the mode of goodness is nishkam karma. But he gives, but there's, pointed out there's two levels of nishkam karma. One that'll take you only up to the Brahman and then stops there. And the other is that from the beginning you're doing it for Krishna. So as long as Krishna is involved, then it will take you right beyond. It will also, the same, it's the same thing, you'll get to the Brahman. Like that, you'll come to that where you understand you're not the body, you're the soul. But it'll carry you beyond. So the endeavor, it's not so the endeavor for that one has to then take up the goodness, that will give the devotional service. Devotional service doesn't count on anything material. Mode of goodness is material. Vishwanath very painstakingly points that out, I think in the Madhurya Kadambini, either that or in Raghavartha Chandrika, that there is no material cause for devotion. Nothing. You're very pious, it doesn't mean you'll get devotional service. You're a great jnani or a situated Brahman, doesn't mean you'll get devotional service. Neither of them will give. In fact, they're actually supported by devotional service. Devotional service comes and assists them. Right? Because in both of them you're chanting the holy name and you're doing these different things. You're associating with sadhus and all that. Otherwise the process doesn't work. But the point is you're doing the sacrifice. So many sages come to the sacrifice. Then, if you're sincere, you'll hear about devotional service. Otherwise, if you're not sincere, don't only talk about karma and jnana. The real purpose is to make an opening that if you are sincere, Krishna will arrange a devotee comes to that assembly and you hear about devotional service. That's why it's written in there. It's a higher principle, but it comes in looking though it's part of the lower principle. And in jnana also, you don't bother with the karma kanda stuff, you just take the part where you sit around and just discuss philosophy. So you'll be sitting around discussing philosophy. If you're sincere, then you may come across a devotee. A Vaishnava may come to that assembly and give Vaishnava philosophy. Then we'll be benefited. Otherwise, not. So there's no cause. That's why he says causeless. The Prabhupada said he made our fortune. No reason for it. He just came, preached, just put it there. He came to us with a devotional service. Like that. See, the thing one has to be very careful about us being the controller. My endeavor, I get the result. It comes from I'm the controller. Right? I am the cause, because I'm the controller. No, Krishna is the supreme controller. So that's very, in the very beginning, just booted out in the second chapter. It's just thrown out that we're the doer. Krishna's the doer. Fine points of it will be given later when he gets into the super soul and the kshetra and all that. I think it's like that. But the principle is established now. All the principles are established in this chapter. Then the details will be slowly, slowly brought out. So the mode of goodness is the best place to situate yourself for performing devotional activities. But it's non-difference, which Krishna is saying. You have to do, in other words, you have to do your prescribed duties. But duties are in goodness, passion, and ignorance. But Krishna has already said, you do those without attachment, right? Without ego, without desiring results. So that's all the ones in the mode of goodness. So prescribed duties come only in three kinds, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Right? But now, so we're going to perform the ones in goodness, but without attachment in that, and connected to the Supreme, means it's not even going to give the material mode of goodness result. So it's not karma. It's bhakti. So it's simultaneously. It's not that one comes, then the other. It's that the devotional service has stipulated this. If Krishna said, you know, passion, that's what we do. You know? Like, so there is a... Sometimes it gets... Devotees become very, you know, over-interested in the position of, like, vegetarian. And how good it is, you know, somebody's becoming vegetarian and this and that. And Prabhupada points out, you know, pigeons are also vegetarian, but they're not great spiritualists. He says, we're not vegetarians, you know, we're Krishnatarians, like that. Is that Krishna eats these things, therefore we eat that. If Krishna ate, you know, Krishna ate automobiles, that's what we'd be offering, and we'd be eating that, you know. But Krishna says, patram pushvam palan toyam. So, that's what we're offering, and because Krishna ate it, that's what we're eating. And Krishna happens to eat vegetarian things, so we're vegetarian. That's the position. We're not overly enamored by piety, because otherwise this is piety. And we see that it gets in the way, even in the spiritual realm. The gopis, when they're in spiritual bodies, we have to remember this, they're in spiritual bodies, in Vrindavan, in Krishna's pastimes, and they see Krishna, and they're with the eternal nitya siddhas in the transcendental realm. But because there's some attachments due to their piety. See, piety also creates attachments. This is also something that's many times bewilders devotees, especially Western. It's because before they may have been leading a more predominantly, you know, non-regulated life. And because of this, you get certain gross material attachments. Attachments to, you know, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, meat eating, like that. Then it's very easy to see, okay, these are bad. You know, you can see how they're, you know, violent and the results that you get, and everything is not good. So then you can give those up. But Krishna is saying give up pious and impious. So then what happens is sometimes devotees get enamored by the pious. But the pious also create material result, right? Like that. Impious, you get this sinful, rough reaction. And pious, you get a pleasant reaction. But they're both material. They both keep you here. Right? Means, it on the platform of sense gratification, one is interested in sex simply for sense gratification. But if one is pious, then he's interested in the dynasty, he's interested in the relationships, the position in the whole social structure of, you know, families with children, and all that. That is the interest. So now if you want to get children, there's a mechanical system called sex by how you get it. So then, it's a whole different view. So this is coming from piety. So there's attachment to the relationships and the, you know, that the son will carry on the traditions or do the pindas for us or, you know, I've amassed so much wealth, I'm attached to it. You know I'm going to die, so at least I can give it to somebody who I really like, you know, and you know, who do you like better than your own kind, your own family. So you give the money to them. So in this way you feel my endeavor is continue, you know. I am the endeavor, I'm the... So like this, that's the pious side. You meet such a person, a very pious, gentle, so many good qualities. So the point is the sinful has been rejected because it's a mode of ignorance. You don't know what to do or not to. But this passion, even though it's very gentle, is also rejected. And the goodness that you want to go to the Brahman is rejected. So we just take those activities that will progress us. At least the Brahman is in the direction of Krishna, right? Krishna says there's one path. So that means you got hell at one end, you know, from sinful activities, and you got the Brahman at the other of pious activity. But on the other side of that is Krishna. So you want to get to Krishna, you go through that Brahman. Therefore, we perform the activities with detachment. That gives us the Brahman realization, and then from there we go to Krishna. But you're not going to get to Krishna, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentions in the Brahma Samhita, unless you know what the goal is. It says you can't hit a target if you don't know what the target, if you don't aim at the target. You just have a target over there and just shoot an arrow anywhere. It's not going to hit the target. You have to be fixed, one-pointed on that target. Then you'll make a bullseye. Then it works. So these things in the motive, because Krishna said it. The motive goodness is so, what do we care? We've been motive goodness so many times. You know? And that, but we're still here. So the motive goodness is mixed with passion and ignorance. So when Krishna talks here of these activities and these modes without attachment, he's talking in relationship to devotional service. He's saying this in relationship to doing your... He says, do your duties. Right? He's made that very clear. Do your duties. Now you can do it in one of three modes. Right? Because the body and the mind, the intelligence, the ego, they're going to interact with the material nature. So the body is doing the activity. Right? The senses are meeting the sense objects. The mind is not attached to those. The mind doesn't have any desire for those. Right? The intelligence doesn't think I'm the doer. And the ego thinks I'm serving the Krishna. Right? So it's all been nicely cleared. Then one can work on the platform of soul. So it's simultaneous. Like that. It's included. The mode of goodness is included in the proper, in Nishkam Karma. Because you're going to choose that. Because he's already said, this is the way you do it. Now when you practically get down to it, you have to pick those rules and regulations to follow. So out of the vast, you know, things that are given in the Vedic literatures as prescribed duties, then you're going to take those ones that fit these things. So that'll be the ones in the mode of goodness. But then it says, but even in the mode of goodness, there's desire for the Brahman. So even that's cut out. So when you cut that out, it's actually pure goodness. You know, but we haven't fully understood. Krishna hasn't explained the modes and all this and that. But it's pure goodness, which means transcendental. That's Vasudeva Sattva. So in the spiritual realm, they perform their duties. It's mentioned in Vaikuntha. They're going around and the Lakshmis are all dusting the walls and they're talking about Vishnu and they're offering prayers. They're doing, everything's working very regulated. Jaya and Vijaya are standing at the gate, you know, and they're keeping out people who they feel are not qualified. So when this, you know, small group of children, you know, walk up and that, and they just say, hey, wait a minute, you know. Not even dressed, these guys, you know, and they want to go into Vaikuntha. You know? So then they're dealing, they're doing their duties. In Vrindavana, doing the duties. Mother Yashoda cooks for Krishna every day. She's always arranging his clothes and making new ornaments for him and seeing that he put him into rest at night and wake him up in the morning. You know? Like that. She's always doing these things. You know, making special he's stealing butter from other gopis. They're coming and complaining, so he's thinking, well, maybe is their butter's better than our butter? He's not satisfied, so then she gets together 8 very special cows and all this and feeds them very special herbs so that the butter will come out to be the most wonderful. And then in this way she thinks she's going to keep him in the house, so she's trying to discipline him, trying to keep the social peace. She's doing all these things, but it's all his service for Krishna. It's being done with no attachment for herself, no desire for me, for any of these things. And it's done as pure love. There's no attachment to the rules. So Krishna changes how it's going to go. That's the way it goes. They don't care. If it was in Vaikuntha, you wouldn't find that things would be changed. One, it wouldn't be Nanda Baba would be doing the yagya. You know, Vaikuntha Pati would be sitting there while some yagya is done. Nanda Baba's there. We do always like this. It's our duty to, you know, do sacrifice. And Krishna comes along. He's a kid. It's all Nanda Baba and all his brothers. They're the senior members of the community. You know, Nanda's grandfather is there. So many senior people are there. This little kid comes along, 8-year-old kid, and says, you know, hey, what's going on here? Hey, don't worry about it. You're a kid. You won't understand. And then he explains everything. And they're like, okay, if this is what will please Krishna. Then they change the whole thing and just offer it to Govardhan Hill. Doesn't matter to them. So for them, it's just a medium for rasa. But it's fluid according to Yoga Maya's dictates. Because they're not attached to the rules. You know? Just their prescribed duty is to love Krishna in their rasa. And then just go through that how Yoga Maya arranges. Well, in Vaikuntha, they're attached to rules and regulations. So Yoga Maya will always regulate it. She'll always bring it in a very regulated way. Like that. It'll never happen otherwise. There won't be any mistakes, you know, nothing like that. Is that so? That is meant. If there's a separate endeavor for the mode of goodness, that's not endeavor in connection with Krishna.
Separate endeavor to become spirit, soul.
No. There's no separate endeavor. Because situating even oneself in the mode of goodness doesn't ensure that one's going to get to the Brahman platform. That's only if you perform those activities without attachment. Right? And we see this is also then where, devotional service, because it's another entity, then there's so many of the material things that are reflections of it in that. And so at certain times, because it's the original, and all this has been made for the materialists, that sometimes certain things, you can't figure out very nicely. Fighting on the battlefield, the Kshatriyas are in the mode of passion, so that work is passionate work. It's not mode of goodness work. So there's the work itself, what is the mode it's controlled by. Then there's the mood in which, or the endeavor in which one does it. So Arjuna is doing mode of passion work from the platform of detachment, of transcendence, of this mode of goodness, pure goodness. Like that. So this is what comes interesting. Otherwise, then Krishna would have said, yes, it's better you be a Brahmin. Better you be a Brahmin. But he doesn't. He is just your duty, your nature, you do that. That's all. So it works for him. It's not a separate endeavor, but it comes automatically. Nishkam karma brings Brahman realization. You realize you're not this body and you're the spirit soul. I mean, realize. You see it. Practical realization. That comes from that. You can compare this to the material mode of goodness. You know, Krishna's saying those things done in that. But he doesn't leave it at that. You just act in the mode of goodness without connecting to him. It's useless. Krishna says, the reverse comes along. He says, if it's not connected to him, it's useless. So mode of goodness on its own is useless. So separate endeavor for the mode of goodness, because it's, no, we put it all together, it's all devotional service. Otherwise, then why does Krishna take to the point after explaining this, says then you surrender to the bona fide spiritual master? Because if you just follow this yoga ladder that is given here, is this yoga ladder he's explaining, is you do all these things and it'll take you up step by step. But if you connect it to Krishna, see, it's like you go from the mode of ignorance up to the mode of passion, up to the mode of goodness, and then like this, and then you go through various stages of goodness until, if you're fortunate, you come in contact with devotees and take to devotional service. So that's the yoga ladder. But from the very beginning, whatever your position, you connect that to Krishna, the whole line is there. Right? It's just like, I can start here, you know, and then, you know, I go through and then I finally get to the generator and I can touch my light bulb there, it goes on. But wherever you are, if you connect it, you bring a line, the bulb works. Because it's Krishna. So when you enter this, then it's all there. Coming to the mode of goodness, the Brahman platform, becoming fixed in one's intelligence, the control of the senses, it's all included in the package in developing pure love for Krishna. But you have to keep that as the goal, pure love for Krishna. Then it works very nicely.
So,
if
I've given it.
Yes. It's included. I mean, you look at the lifestyle and the mode of goodness. You don't get it. The lifestyle and the mode of goodness is perfectly given in the Pancharatra. That's the lifestyle of those who live in this world. Getting up, taking the bath, wearing tilak, neck beads, wearing our cloth, and chanting Gayatri, going to the temple, ringing the bell, offering obeisances. That's what any proper Brahmin is going to do. And that's just, everybody in ISKCON is supposed to do that. So, the mode of goodness is already there.
It's all been done.
It's all been done, all been connected to Krishna. And if you look at, that's one thing. We've already done all that. So, every devotee has done the first, that we discussed yesterday, the first anga of deity worship. Out of the five angas, the first one, every devotee's done by the time they've gotten to the Mangalarti, you know, and seen Mangalarti. Then another interesting point is then Atiti Seva, Vaishnav Seva, then Prashad Seva, worshipping the Dham, worshipping Tulsi, chanting, hearing Bhagavatam. And basically, all those are done by the time we finish Prashad in the morning. So by 10 o'clock in the morning, every devotee has done the first section of the Pancharatra and the fifth section of Pancharatra. It's been done. Now it's just who actually just sat down and also you've seen puja. Some have done the puja, the pujaris, and others have watched it and seen it and got exactly the same benefit. So that means the whole Pancharatric text has been accomplished by 10 o'clock in the morning. Now, if that's not mode of goodness, I don't know what is. Right? As far as activity goes. Then we do a portion of that, same thing again in the evening. You know, so it's like, and then during the middle of the day, then we bring in all this nishkam karma. Now, take your conditioned nature. Before breakfast and in the evening, we're not worried so much about conditioned nature. Condition meaning you have a body, so we engage in hearing, chanting, remembering, and dancing, and taking the shot, and all those things. You've engaged the senses, like Ambarish, in Atmaniveda, just everything engaged in the service. That we've done. But during the day, then, we specifically address our conditioned nature, what it is. Then we deal with that during the day. And then in the evening time, then we don't worry about that so much, and we get back to our, you know, spiritual activities, sadhana. It means it's all spiritual, but I'm saying that that mode of goodness aspect, like that. Because our service that we do may be in any of the mixed, controlled by any of the mixed modes, like that. So it's, but we do them without attachment, so there's no reaction. I manage, that's controlled by passion, but I'm not attached, so I don't get the reactions of passion. I get the results of goodness. You know? I do business, that's passion and ignorance. I do without attachment, I get the results of goodness. You know, I do art, some form of art or assisting others. That's controlled by ignorance. But I do it without attachment. I get the result of motivation. So between sadhana bhakti in the morning and evening and nishkam karma in the day, I'm situated in goodness the whole time. So the only endeavor for the mode of goodness is just understanding that I'm doing according to the scriptural rules and without attachment and doing it in the proper way. But that's just doing your service properly. So the only real endeavor is that we just see I'm doing without attachment. But that's nishkam karma, that's devotional service.
What's the point that makes it dynamic? Sometimes you feel that you just fail with doing the same thing every day. What makes our activities become dynamic?
Oh, what makes the activity we're doing daily? Means Krishna is ever fresh, so if we can connect it and remember Krishna, then it becomes fresh. Because there's always something new. I mean, it's like we hear what Krishna eats in the Bhogarti song. So we understand the style that's there. We can see from the cooking what is the basic style. You know? But now Radharani's been cooking since time immemorial, is cooking today, you know, has cooked for that song, and will be cooking for eternity. She never cooks exactly the same. But it's not that one day she cooks, you know, Indian, and one day she cooks Mexican, and the next day she cooks like that. You know, it's like one day is Gandharva food, and the next day is Rakshasa, and the next day is Vidyapara, and then Charana food, like that. No. But it's just because it's connected, it's ever fresh. There's so many little subtle changes this way, that way, and the combinations. And so Krishna's unlimitedly fresh. So as we do the service and we connect it to Krishna, there's always something more, something new. And even if the service itself externally basically is perfect, there's always how we see it, what realizations we get from it. Because by doing the activity without attachment, we get realization. And Krishna is unlimited, that means we can have unlimited realization. And that realization makes it fresh, because now we see it from a different light. This way, we see it from that angle.
So if we're feeling a bit like lethargic, that means we're having some attachment.
Yeah, some attachment must, something must be there. Some attachment, or we think we're the doer, I've done this so much. Right? You know? We do it so much. I've done this. You know, and then I think, you know, okay, I've done this enough. Because I think I'm the doer. You know? But it's not. Krishna is, if Krishna wants us to do it, then we'll do it. Then we should be doing it. Because Krishna is the doer. We're just being a great instrument. And the result is His. So many times the attachment means we want to do or not do because of the attachment. Result. We're not getting a good result. Are we getting the good result? We want to do it like that. So one has to be very careful there. You know, some attachment, some ego, some, how you say, some material desire, or you know, thinking we're the cause. You know, we don't want to do it. Krishna says, don't be attached to not doing your duty. So I don't want to do it. It's your duty. I don't want to do it. That's an attachment also. Or attached to not doing. You know, so it's just the anarthas. Otherwise, it's ever fresh, never any. Every day, Mother Yashoda goes to wake up Krishna in the morning, and every day, it's ecstatic. There's never, she never tires of waking up Krishna in the morning. Like that. She's always happy to see. In fact, she never even notices is that, you know, in fact, like every day, he's always wearing a blue cheddar instead of a yellow one. And every day she wonders, how is it he's wearing Balaram's cheddar? You know? You know, and all the marks on his body and all the different, you know, colors and all that. He thinks, you know, yesterday the gopis didn't bathe him properly. You know, he went out wrestling with the boys and so many marks on his body from the wrestling. And then, you know, because they're playing and all that on the hills and all so many different colors come on them. She never thinks that, you know, what's going on. And every day she sees like this. Because every day Krishna is so fresh, his beauty and everything is so wonderful. She's just attracted by that. And just because her service is to keep Krishna and motherly affection, keep Krishna clean, he's dressed properly. Others, you know, she says, you know, today I'll tell Balaram not to, the boy shouldn't be so rough with him because there's so many marks on his body. You know, like that. So she's just thinking. So the freshness is there. He never thinks otherwise. It's ever fresh. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.